KTY, go ahead.
Set time.
That's what I was about to ask you, Mel. Does the machine go into the net mode these days? The answer is yes. Stand by, we'll put on the right set of phones.
Now see, timer's off.
I have two different sets of earphones, and I got used to one and not the other. Okay. At this time, Mel and Dick begin the SecNet. And for those who haven't heard it before, our major purpose is to dispense a little bit of education, a little bit of amusement, humor, into this hobby of ham radio. Lots of people have got questions as to how does all this stuff work? How do I use the best possible antenna, the best possible transmission line, the greatest transmitter, the best receiver? Which mode of operation should I be using? What frequency should I be on? Do I have the right ham license? All this kind of jazz. We try to answer those kind of questions. The subjects that are appropriate for the SecNet are any subject of interest to ham radio operators. So that includes electronics, television, satellites, occasionally a little bit of astronomy gets in there. Paul gives us a nice report, WS2N, each week as to what NASA is doing and what Rover and Spirit and Opportunities are doing on Mars. And so, in general, we have a good time. Join us, and particularly sign in if you've got a question or a comment. So that's the main thing required right now. Give me your call letters and your name. And I'm so darn forgetful. You got to give me your name again, even though you signed it five times before. And I'll follow that with a yes or a no. And a yes means you do have a question or a comment for the net. So do we have any check in this at this time? Please give me your call letters and name. T2RIW and the TechNet.
Yes.
Okay, I think I heard Barry and Lou. W2JTW, I think it is. We had a little bit of a double there. So Bob and Lou, anyone else to check in? Yeah, one more call. Anyone else to check into the SecNet? Please give me your call letters and name at this time.
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions.
Okay, Steve with a no. Anyone else?
WBQCUK, good evening.
Okay, a man who is incognito named Bill, WB2CUK, signed in. The man who runs the swap and shop every week. Anybody else? Okay, maybe we'll drum up some questions. Barry, make sure you got enough audio. Talk a little bit closer to the mic. And you and I had quite a conversation today. We almost settled the equation of the world. And now we're into a superior technique of talking Joe Taylor into giving us audio off the moon. And two, moon bounce, K2LIW and the TechNet.
Good evening, everybody, and TechNet and 2ND. Okay, I got a question for some smart guy out there. There's a lot of them, so Mel might be the one to pounce on this one. A fellow amateur of ours unfortunately passed away a few days ago, and he willed me, among other things, a nice kilowatt amplifier made by Heathkit, and it's beautiful, and I will probably get that on the air soon. But he also willed me an antenna. It's a tri-band beam. It has three elements on 10 and, excuse me, on 15 and 20, and four elements on 10, I think. Maybe not. Maybe it's only got three elements on each band. It doesn't have a name. Somebody wrote the word Heathkit on one of the elements. It looks an awful lot like a TH-4, an old TH-4, something called a TH-4 Thunderbird. It resembles that very much, except the things that hold the elements to the boom are a little different. And now, I know Heathkit once sold what I believe to be was high-gain antennas. I don't know if they sold them under the Heathkit name or the high-gain name. But if anybody knows what I've got and can help me out with it, I've been on the Internet looking. I haven't been too successful, and too envy.
No, I think I know what he's got.
Okay, that sounds like Mel knows, and when you do come back, Barry, do give us a lot more audio if you
the boom, is it with the aluminum saddles over?
Yes, it is. They like clamp over the boom. They're like molded kind of pieces of pressed aluminum, and they sort of form to the element in the boom. You're good, Mel.
Okay, now, the driven element, does it have a matching section? In other words, it's split, and is the driven element standing on insulated with a bar that goes across, like a solid bar that goes across, and the element, the driven element mounted on that bar, and then the middle of it has an end connector? Over.
I would have to go out in the dark and take a look. I will do that now. It's in my tool shed. I can't fit it in my house. I know that some of the pieces say B4-4, B2-4, B2-3, A or B1-1. These are the clues. I don't have much other clues, and I don't have... There's some big, heavy metal clamps. You know, cast metal clamps. I guess they're supposed to be... They're probably what holds some of the stuff that holds the driven element, I imagine. They're cast aluminum or white metal, you know.
Roger. Yeah, cast aluminum. All right. Now, the center, do you remember if the point where you hooked the coax on, did it have an end connector over?
Okay, I'm going to go out and look, Mel, and I'll be right back. I'm putting my coat and my shoes on and taking my flashlight, and I'm going to look through everything for something with an end connector, and I'll be right back. I'm hoping that you, because you know all this stuff, you're really good at this, I got to tell you. You could sell this stuff, this information. I got a feeling you remember it from the Heath Kit catalog. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay, because there was one beam that was made under some little deal going with Mosley Electronics. That I think, was the one that you were talking about. That's why it had those cast aluminum brackets that go on, that hold the elements in place. And the telltale thing is, you tell me what you see on the driven element, okay, Barry?
Okay, Mel, it doesn't look like Mosley stuff. I know what Mosley looks like, and it doesn't, it's only got cast, a casting, I can't even tell what this casting is for. It's got like six screws in it. It probably has something to do with holding the, it says mast clamp, so I think it has something to do with holding the mast, the boom to the mast. I think that's all the casting stuff is. I'm sure of that. In fact, I'm sure of it. That's just to hold the driven, the mast to the boom. All the other stuff is pressed aluminum. You know what it looks like. It's like half round, in two directions, and it clamps over the element and the boom. That's typical high gain stuff.
No, it could also be typical of, the traps. Are the traps in... What do the traps look like? Do they look like, are they enclosed in aluminum cans, or are they plastic, you know, just that polyethylene barry over?
They look. I was out there looking at them. They're aluminum tubing, they look like, you know, shiny aluminum tubing.
Okay, the only other company that did that was Telerex. Telerex did the same thing, very similar to Mosley, almost like they were working together. So it could be a Telerex if it's more than 20 years old and has that type of construction. I would almost say Telerex is the one, Barry, over.
Okay, I had a Telerex antenna, and they used to put the elements through the boom. They're not doing that yet.
Okay, they didn't put it through the boom, okay. All right, that's what I'd say. That's the way Telrex and Mosley just, you know, that was the difference in their antennas. But they're the only two at the time that had the traps in aluminum containers. Heath Kit had a beam on the market, but that beam was not made by Heath Kit. They were just marketing it, Barry, over.
Yeah, that's my guess. And I'm telling you, Mel, this thing looks very much like what they call a TH4, but not exactly. Why I say that is the TH4 has a 10-meter element with no traps on it. They did that. And it has like three elements for 10, 15, and 20. You know, separate elements, but they put this 10-meter element before the last director. And I don't even think that the last director worked on 10 meters. I think it only worked on 10 and 15. I'm pretty sure. I'm going to go out there and count the traps, and I'll be right back.
One quick question.
Let me know if it had. Look at the driven element and see if it's got an end connector.
You go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, your heat kit amplifier, do you believe it's the 1,000-watt job or the 2,000-watt job?
Well, it's got, I think it's a 2,000-watt job. It looks very nice. It's got three 500s, a pair of them.
And two EO.
Is the power supply a separate unit? EO recognized, but is the power supply a separate unit, or is it all self-contained?
It's built in. It's a self-contained power supply. And it does not have the 10-meter switch in it. Now, boy, I'd love to get that.
Slightly later. Rich, go ahead.
Hey, good evening, Dick and Suio. Yeah, me and Barry discussed this last night. He's got the SB-221, which is the same unit as the SB-220, except it was after that law was passed where they couldn't put 10 meters in the amplifiers without proof of a ham license. They came up with the 221 as a result, same amplifier, without 10 meters, and you had to get an upgrade kit upon proof of an amateur license to add 10 meters. Kind of a dumb law. The FCC made them do that. What Barrier needs is the upgrade kit for the 221 that was offered to make it into a 220, which had 10 meters.
How difficult is that kit going to be to get this many years downrange of heat kit closing down? And if such a kit appeared on eBay, I bet somebody's going to want a bundle of dollars for it. Back to you, Rich.
Okay, well, what I told Harry to do, there was a guy back in the 70s and 80s who wrote extensive articles in Ham Radio Magazine on the SB-220. He's kind of a maven. Maybe you know him, Dick. His name was Richard Measures, AG6K. Ring a bell?
Negatory. Don't know AG6K. Now, in order to get 10 meters in there, I guess you're going to have to use a great big fancy rotary switch. But I imagine a smart guy like Barry can find a way of putting a relay in there to give you the extra coil on the capacitor. So I think getting the original kit is going to be difficult. He may have to do a home brew to get 10 meters back in there. What do you think, Rich?
I'll come in.
Well, what he may do, this guy AG6K was selling all kinds of mod kits for the SB-220. I don't even know if the gentleman is still around, but it's a good bet if it's available, he would have it.
Comment.
Person with a comment, give us your call and name, and then proceed with your comment.
Hi, Dick. This is KO2OK, Bennett in New Jersey. Just a quick comment. AG6K is still around, but he does mostly some modifications and fixes for the Heathkit SB220 line. There are people that have done conversions from the SB220 and SB221 to 6 meters, and they sell the excess parts, including an entire band switch on the SB220. You have to look it up. Like on QTH.com, you'll see guys that are doing modifications to 6 meters on the SB220, and like W2CQM or his brother, I can't remember what it's called, it's a W1QJ or something like that, and they sell those excess parts. In the SB-221, you also have to remove the low-pass filter. Back to Ned.
Very fine, Bennett. Bennett, what's your approximate guess as to the price of that upgrade kit?
Well, it's not a kit. I mean, these are, I don't think the kit that Heathkit sold is available anymore, but like I said, these guys, a bunch of them are doing business, doing conversions of SB-220s to 6 meters only. So they rip out the guts, including the band switch and all the associated parts, and they keep them all together you can basically buy the coil, the band switch, the associated parts for probably $30 or $40 or something like that. I had done that when I converted my SB-221 to an SB-220. bought mine from one of these guys that did these 6-meter conversions back to net.
Jeff, I know Barry. He's on his handy talkie, listening to what we're saying. He's in the garage with his flashlight, looking at that antenna. My guess, though, is that Barry is going to want to keep 80 through 10 meters in that rig and not convert it over to purely 6 meters. I don't think he's that much of a pure 6-meter person. Let's see if Barry's there. N2MV, KQLIW in the TechNet.
Half of the
hemisphere of the antenna pattern is looking at Earth. Half of the hemisphere is looking at cold sky. And the cold sky hemisphere is seeing something very small, 5, 10 degrees Kelvin. And the hemisphere looking at Earth is seeing 300 degrees Kelvin. That's the hot one. And so you have to eliminate all of those directions of that one. When it comes to tilting the antenna up in the air for moon bounce operation, now only the back lobes are looking at Earth, and you stand a chance. But on the horizon, I think there's very little to be gained. Do the experiment if you want to, Lou, but I predict that without very precise laboratory equipment, you're not going to be able to see the improvement. Now, the closest anyone has come to this is that a genius at AIL named Warren White, way back in 1970 or so, perfected a technique called a low-angle tracking radar. The problem you have with a radar that's looking at a target that's on the horizon is that you got a real target above the horizon. You have a mirror image of the target below the horizon, particularly if the target is over a nice, smooth body of water. And so a tracking radar, which tries to keep the target in the middle of the beam, gets confused. It keeps hopping back and forth between the real image, the real echo, and the image reflection off the water surface or off the ground. And what he perfected was a multiple feed horn on the dish with a fancy hookup so that it electronically steered a null in the direction of the below ground echo, but it didn't steer a null on the real target above ground, and therefore the antenna stopped its hopping operation up and down in elevation and made it a nice steady tracking radar. So in that case, he was able to null out the ground reflection, but only in the vicinity of the main lobe. Noise-wise, I think his improvement would be very minor. So my gut feel, Lou, is that it's going to take a lot more resources on your and my part in order to really lower the ground noise. Although it sounds crazy, the biggest benefit you and I could get would be to spread screening on the ground, which acts as a reflector, reflecting cold sky into that hemisphere of the antenna. As crazy as it sounds, on the ground stations used for satellite work, a number of them have done that, spread screening on the ground all around the base of the dish antenna, and it does lower the ground noise. But for you and I to do that with a tower, that's an awful lot of screening. So, not easy. I know what you're trying to do, and so I'm trying to discourage you. I'm just telling you how tough a problem it is. It is a tough problem. W2JPW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I'm back.
Barry, recognized?
Thanks very much. Well, I always enjoy getting an expert opinion from you because it's, you know, it's just something I thought about and wondered if it would be worth bothering with. Apparently it's not, so I guess I sort of suspected that would be the answer, but, you know, hope is always, always hoping to come again for some idea that's a little different. So thanks, I'll let you, MB is back, so you can continue with him, W2JPW.
Very fine, Lou. Lou, you got a little bit of hum pickup. I wonder if your microphone is right now near a fluorescent light that's over the desk or something like that. You do have some hum pickup at this time. Back to you, Lou.
No, I don't have anything here. That's something new. I'll have to check it out.
And it really is 120 cycle hum. I recognize the sound. So a full wave rectifier somewhere is putting, 10% of your audio is hum, 5%. But for a person wearing earphones like I am, it's reasonably noticeable. Okay, Barry. Barry's back from the excavation in his shed. He's discovered a little bit of gold and some information about his kit. N2MB, give us enough audio. K2LIW.
Okay, real good. I hope this is more audio. Okay, Mel, if you're listening, this antenna copies the high gain TH4 very closely. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It's got 10 traps. First director has four. The driven element has four. Then there's a first reflector, which is the 10-meter element, has no traps. A second reflector, which is the 20 and 15, and that, of course, has one trap in it on each side. So that accounts for the 10 traps. So it does add up, it matches, and the placement of everything looks very much like the high-gain TH4. But the traps all say East Company, Benton Harbor, Michigan on them. Each one tells you which trap it is, but they all say Heath Company. So evidently, High Gain made it for Heath. Heath did, in fact, put their name on it. The measurements, I don't know.
K2TV.
K2TV recognized. Before we turn it back to Mel, I wonder if you happen to have some information on this subject. Please start off with your name, sir. My name is Dick. K2TV, I think it was. Go ahead.
Hey, Dick, very good. Name is Bob here. We're in Copeg. And just to answer, I've been reading the mail. Just to answer, MFJ bought out High Gain, but they've been supporting a lot of their products, a lot of the old High Gain products. So if you either email them or better still, give them a telephone call. They will sell parts, and they probably can get you the information, all the technical documentation for that antenna. And I know they sell, because I bought one for my TH3 Mark III, the old high gain, a plastics kit. And the plastics kit are all the end caps and everything, well, anything plastic on the antenna insulator-wise. They will sell you a kit for that, too, to replace it, to rebuild the antenna. And they do carry it for the older high-gain antennas. So just as a point of information, K2RIW, K2TV.
Very fine, Bob, Robert. Sounds like good information. Mel, K2KEY, go right ahead.
Okay, this is K2KEY, yeah. I picture the antenna. Yeah, I just got, in fact, information about a year or so ago. We inherited in our club a TH3, and an old original TH3, and they had taken it apart. It was quite a mess, in fact, and I tried to, you know, I put it back together, but I wanted to get the information about, you know, a number of things about spacing on the boom and a number of, you know, methods of... way it was assembled, and so I inquired, and yeah, they were very nice. Sent me the original manual. I was able to get the original manual. We downloaded one of the my friend Howie, M2GOT, was able to download all the information on that antenna and assembly, part list, everything. So I guess that MFJ now that is running High Gain, I would assume, has assumed all responsibilities for parts and everything down the line. So I think you'll be in good shape. That antenna, however, Barry, it is possible, from what you described, there was one other antenna that was also very similar. You know, they all were somewhat similar, and they. It could be a Wilson. There was Wilson and Swan antenna. Swan antenna that made, they almost were identical. Gee, in fact, it was impossible almost to tell them apart. They seemed like they were, you know, were copying one another. So it could have been, like I say, Wilson or Swan antenna, the company that basically also was involved with it a long time ago. What did you look at the center connector where you put the feed line on? What kind of connector is it, Barry? Or